from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With no small dose of guidance from economist Jeffrey Sachs, nations around the world have launched the transition from turmoil to economic development. Today, Sachs has some straightforward advice for the United States in Iraq. Forget the occupation, get out of Iraq and out of Iraq's way. Tonight on Point, Jeffrey Sachs and the economist's exit strategy. But first, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld met with protest when he spoke at the National Press Club this afternoon.
There are U.S. soldiers dying in Iraq every day!
In his speech, Rumsfeld described the war in Iraq as a war against terrorism, downplaying earlier claims that the country possessed weapons of mass destruction. He spoke as a new tape from Osama bin Laden called for new attacks on the United States. John Diamond is Pentagon reporter at USA Today. I asked him if the defense secretary has begun to feel the heat of criticism in Washington.
I was interested in Rumsfeld's decision to send his deputy to Capitol Hill yesterday, where Paul Wolfowitz took a lot of heat, especially from Democrats, but also Republicans, on the tremendous costs involved on the issue, on the uncertainty about how long U.S. forces will be there.
Instead of the secretary himself coming up to take that heat.
Instead of the secretary himself going up and facing the heat. Secretary Rumsfeld was confronted with a couple of protesters at the National Press Club up in the balcony who were chanting things about how many kids did you kill today, sort of slogans reminiscent of the Vietnam protests. Rumsfeld afterwards did not really respond and afterwards allowed us how he is starting to get used to this because this kind of thing is happening fairly often as he travels around and makes public appearances.
Behind all that, is there an evolution in what Secretary Rumsfeld is saying, or are they pretty much staying on the same course in Iraq?
Well, they've clearly made a shift, a significant shift this week, in that they are framing the deployment to Iraq, the commitment to Iraq, in terms of the war on terrorism, not in terms of danger to the United States caused by weapons of mass destruction. That issue is sliding down and out of sight. Very little discussion of that. Rumsfeld was asked one or two questions about it. He said he still expects them to be found, but had very little else to say. They're now calling the conflict in Iraq, the occupation of Iraq, as the central front in the war on terrorism. Of course, critics are saying if that's so, it's because the United States chose to be there, not because Iraq was a vortex of terrorism to begin with.
But at the same time, Secretary Rumsfeld was saying today that he doesn't want to see more U.S. troops in Iraq. Let's listen.
Our goal is not to create a dependency in Iraq by flooding it with Americans. Our goal is to get a still broader international face on it, and then a considerably greater Iraqi face on it as they contribute more and more to their own political future and their own economic future. To the extent you are too heavy a footprint, you don't help them, you hurt them.
Donald Rumsfeld today, John Diamond, the secretary saying before the National Press Club, emphasizing that it's the Iraqis, not the United States or other countries, that bear responsibility to quickly assume responsibility for their country's own political, economic, security future. Is this the beginnings of an exit strategy?
Yes, the strategy clearly is get Iraqi forces in and therefore thereby get U.S. forces out. There's already a massive program underway at a place called Tazar Air Base in Hungary where thousands of former Iraqi soldiers are being retrained for police and military police roles in Iraq. There's already 55,000 Iraqis on the ground working with the coalition, and that number is expected to grow dramatically. But there is a trade-off, a very delicate balance the United States has to strike. And they've made a huge investment in lives and money so far in Iraq. And to pull out prematurely would risk a resumption of chaos, a resumption of violence, and the loss of the entire investment, if you will, that the United States has made in knocking out that regime and establishing some sort of democratic government in Iraq.
In Washington, how realistically are people looking at this handoff idea? Even Rumsfeld himself said today that oil revenue alone wouldn't be enough to rebuild the decrepit infrastructure in Iraq, and he suggested that they develop tourism as an alternative to oil, this sounds like a slim reed for a country in that much
Another
trouble.
Another significant change in the message coming from the administration, which only a few months ago was repeatedly talking about the importance of oil and oil revenue in turning things around in Iraq. Rumsfeld today mentioned water as possibly even a more important and valuable resource to Iraq than oil. I've never heard anyone say that before.
Are you saying that Iraq would export water as a commodity?
Presumably in the region, through pipelines perhaps, to the water-starved countries further down in the Gulf. They, of course, have the Tigris and Euphrates water sources. And it's true, water is an important resource in that region, but the kind of money that is needed for the rebuilding of Iraq, the miscalculation that Rumsfeld today admitted to in terms of how damaged, how far gone that country was from the previous wars and the Saddam's regime and so forth, is eating up tremendous amounts of money, and Iraq is not yet in a position to take on tremendous new revenues from oil production. They're pumping out about all they can do right now.
If Iraq is indeed being described by the Bush administration as the central front in the war on terror, they heard from another major player in that arena today, a new video and audio tape reportedly from Osama bin Laden, this time a video showing him walking with his main deputy, al-Zawahiri, and with some pretty tough messages saying that people who don't agree with killing, who don't agree with violence, he said, let them step out of the way. I would say to them, bin Laden said, those who are afraid of climbing mountains will live in pits and holes. And al-Zawahiri warning on this tape that the real battle has not started yet. He said, prepare yourself for the punishment for your crimes. I guess he's talking to the West, the United States there. How is this being received in Washington?
Well, of course, it's a symbolic piece of video with the two seen with walking sticks climbing in those same mountains that they appear to be talking about. First visuals we've had of them in many, many months. It certainly undercuts the notion that the center of the war on terrorism is in Iraq if we suddenly have these two popping up in a backdrop that it would appear to be either Afghanistan or Pakistan. And it will be troublesome for the Bush administration if they appear to continue to be able to operate freely while the United States struggles in Iraq. They, however, are also, in a sense, agreeing with the administration that Iraq is a very central place in the war, in the terrorism conflict, because they're exhorting Iraqis to not give up their arms and to continue to resist the U.S. troop presence there. So there is a collision in the offing, and it appears to be in Iraq that it will happen.
So two big voices booming over Iraq today, Donald Rumsfeld and Osama bin Laden, apparently still free and walking around. John Diamond, thanks very much for joining us.
You're so welcome.
John Diamond is Pentagon reporter for USA Today. He spoke with me from Washington. In the 1990s, economist Jeffrey Sachs was the globe-trotting boy wonder of post-Soviet economic development. More recently, he's linked arms with U2's Bono and Africa to fight for the world's most impoverished nations. Now, he's drawing on a world of experience to make a suggestion to George W. Bush. If you really want Iraq to thrive, says Sachs, get U.S. troops out of the country. It's advice that flies in the face of conventional wisdom in Washington, but Sachs is urgent with the message. Step back, he says. Take a look at the big picture and get out of Iraq. What about it? Could the U.S. military presence actually be an impediment to Iraqi redevelopment? Should U.S. soldiers just get out of the way? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Jeffrey Sachs, the director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Since the 1980s, he has advised governments on economic policy in Latin America, Eastern Europe, the former Soviet Union, Asia, and Africa. Good evening, and welcome back to On Point, Jeffrey Sachs.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Great to be with you.
Good to have you. Also with me in the studio tonight, and good to have you right here, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Jeffrey.
How are you, Jack?
Good, thanks.
Jeffrey Sachs, here we are. Your essay in the Financial Times today says, the longer the U.S. stays, that is, in Iraq, the longer will be the agony in Iraq, both economically and politically. And yet we hear it every minute of the day from Washington on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. We must not pull out now. We're committed. We have to go the distance. What do you see that's not apparent in Washington?
Haven't we heard that before, where we've said in the middle of a disaster, we have to go the distance? only to find out that going the distance means prolonging the disaster until you finally get out. I'm just trying to shorten the time path to the inevitable. What Rumsfeld said today was really quite illuminating and extraordinary. He wants to put, as he said, an Iraqi face on things. So they want Iraqis in show, but this is endless administration spin. What they really want is to occupy Iraq, to have military bases there, to control the flow of oil. That's why they weren't in the first place. It won't work because the era of colonialism is over, but these folks just don't get it.
They don't get it, but they've got a lot of support in Washington now, and an awful lot of people thinking, gosh, if these, look, it's so bad with the troops there. If they go, it will be complete chaos. It will be civil war. Everything will be blown up yet again. And you'll have a swamp for Iraq, a swamp of terrorism, a swamp of potentially Iranian-style Shiite nation, Iran, where they're building a new nuclear weapon now. What's the path that you see out of that vision, Jeffrey Sachs, that's not so clear even to many leading Democrats?
Well, first of all, I have been saying for a long time, don't do this. This is nothing but a deep trap, a huge mistake. And that's not ex post reasoning that we somehow have learned that we weren't welcome as liberators, that the situation was going to be bad. This was utterly predictable beforehand. If you ask me now to give you a guarantee that there's a nice, clean way out, I could not. Because Iraq is a mess. But us staying there with 140,000 troops, spending the $87 billion in these hapless ventures is foolhardy. What I would like to clarify from what John Diamond said just a few minutes ago,
yes,
when he said we found out that the situation was a lot worse than we thought, that's not quite true. What's happened is that Iraq is producing so much less oil than was projected, not because the situation was worse than we expected, but because they've blown up the pipeline in the north. They've blown up dozens and dozens of electricity pylons for the electricity grid that run the fields in the south. They've fallen a million barrels a day short of projection because of the terrorism that has come afterwards, not because of the desperate state of infrastructure beforehand, but because the United States as an occupying army is in no position to govern this country.
So are you
and
saying
that's
if
where $10 billion, that's where $10 billion per year went down the drain in unpatrolable pipelines?
In lost oil. But are you saying then if the United States walks away from Iraq, somehow the pipelines will be safe, the terrorists will evaporate?
Could not guarantee that for a moment. But as long as we're there, they're not going to be safe either. We have put ourselves into the middle of a hornet's nest. We are the biggest target. We have no legitimacy in the region. Approval of America throughout the world has plummeted, but throughout the region has simply disappeared. And in that context, we can't control things whether we have 140,000 troops or double that. We are going to face continuing unrest and no reconstruction, and not because this is a poor country. It's because America cannot govern this country as an occupying army, and an Iraqi face is not going to make a difference to that.
We're going to come back and look in some detail at a potential alternative. But, Jack Beatty, here's the basic critique. The U.S. soldiers who are there sweating and risking their lives are an impediment to redevelopment, not an aid.
Yes, because they are creating a war around them. Now, there would be resistance in any case to a consolidated new regime. But imagine if the UN had political control there. If we simply said, you know, if President Bush said, I was right the first time, we don't do nation building. That's for the UN. We're turning this over to them tomorrow, and we're going to reorient our forces. We'll take care of the borders. But we're not going to be in the cities. That's going to be up to Arab forces, Turkish forces, and so on, and begin to essentially redefine the problem. The problem is people are shooting at us, and we don't have to get involved in their civil war with Ba'athists. Our enemy is al-Qaeda. We can take care of al-Qaeda from coming across the border by talking to the Saudis and by making sure the borders are safe.
And yet it all sits on top of an awful lot of oil and a powder keg of politics in a very strategic area. We're talking tonight about a big economist's big exit strategy for the United States in Iraq. What about it? Would Iraq be better off if the U.S. left right now or soon? and turn the country and its economy over to the Iraqis. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a big economist's big exit strategy for the United States in Iraq. Our guest is Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, a special advisor to Kofi Annan on poverty alleviation, a former consultant to the IMF, the World Bank, the OECD, the UN Development Program, and more countries than you can shake a stick at. He's with us tonight from New York. I'm joined in the studio by our On Point news analyst, Jack Beatty. You can join us as well. Could the U.S. military presence actually be an impediment to Iraqi development? Is it wishful thinking to imagine that America can now or soon walk away? And if Jeffrey Sachs is right, if the U.S. should go, why is almost everyone on both sides of the aisle in Washington saying it must not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jeff Sachs, we've been talking in very large terms here, but give us a little more detail. What's the game plan? Describe the exit path as you would see it. Who would go? Who would come? Who would run the country?
Tom, I think we have to find a UN cover, as Jack said, to a transition to an Iraqi government. This can be done, in my opinion, in a year. I'd like to see the U.S. In a phased pullout over the course of the year, a replacement by, yes, tens of thousands of troops, just what Jack said, from the region. Islamic troops, Pakistan has offered, India has offered, other countries in the region have offered, and a handover to an Iraqi government. The question you ask is a really good one. Why don't we do that? And I think there are two main reasons. One is that the goal here has not ever been make an Iraqi democracy and get out. We are there to establish a base in the region because we felt after September 11 that Saudi Arabia could no longer be it. We lost Iran, and, quote-unquote, from our perspective, you know, the why is our oil under their sand perspective. We lost Iran at the end of the 70s. We embraced Saddam in the 80s. Let's remember that because we were finding new allies, new alliances to keep that oil going and to resist Iran. Yeah. We lost Iraq in the 1990s. We relied on Saudi support. And boy, the Bush family relied on Saudi support for a lot of business for a long time. And then Saudi Arabia has absolutely soured as a not only not an ally, but clearly is a very, very deeply rotten. And so after September 11, the Bush neocon said they dusted out the old papers about invading the oil fields of the Middle East and said we got to get into Iraq because we can no longer rely on Saudi Arabia. And if that seems a little bit like a fantasy, Wolfowitz basically told us that in that little indiscretion of his in talking to Vanity Fair.
He said it wasn't really about weapons of mass destruction. That was a bureaucratic cover.
But he said it was a bureaucratic cover. What we were interested in was finding a way to get out of Saudi Arabia because that had simply become too hot. Now, what about everybody else? You know, it is a bit of a mystery why we have almost no politics in this country, except Governor Dean, and because he is a real politician right now. He's gaining tremendous importance because he is speaking out, but almost nobody else is. One of the reasons is they all voted for this. You know, they all rolled over and voted for this, and now they're trying to defend their own positions. And that's very unfortunate.
So you're saying phase U.S. troops out over the next year, put a bunch of U.N. troops in there, including many perhaps from the Middle East itself, get an Iraqi government in there, and then as an economist who has worked with countries in difficult circumstances, what kind of road, assuming there's no civil war, there's no kind of apocalyptic terrorist intervention, and that's a big assumption, but assuming that for a moment, what kind of road as an economist do you see for Iraq in the circumstances you describe?
Iraq sits on the second largest reserve of oil in the entire world. 25 million people sitting on proved reserves of 112 billion barrels and probable reserves of another 200 billion barrels. This is not a poor country. It happens to be a country whose oil pipelines are getting blown up right now and whose electricity pylons are getting blown up. But I don't worry about the economics of Iraq, and I would never advocate putting in large amounts of foreign assistance. Because people are saying, oh, we have to build the infrastructure. Well, the places I work in Africa have no infrastructure, and those people in Africa are dying, and we're paying zero attention to them. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to put in U.S. tax dollars, which we can't afford for the truly desperate, impoverished people. We're supposed to put that in into a middle-income country sitting on the second largest supply of oil reserves in the whole world. It's absolutely ludicrous. It could only make sense to Halliburton and Bechtel. It couldn't conceivably make sense to anybody else.
You've got a number out there that says maybe $10 billion for U.N. oversight of Iraq, as opposed to out of the $87 billion President Bush is requesting something like $75 billion for the U.S. overseeing Iraq in the next year. Why such a huge difference? Why would it cost the U.N. maybe $10 billion and the U.S. Seven or eight times that?
Well, let me go through the numbers a little bit slowly, because there are a lot of things in that $87 billion. $71 billion is for Iraq.
Right.
Most of the rest is for Afghanistan. Of the $71 billion, $51 billion is for the for the military occupation, which I would like to see cut by more than half, meaning that over a year we would phase it out. So perhaps I'd say $20 billion by the time we get our troops out. And then they put in $20 billion for Iraqi reconstruction, which is absolutely ludicrous to me. You know, I've been struggling for 2 years to get this administration to commit more than $200 million to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria through the global fund to fight those diseases.
$200 million.
This is all the president has said we can afford. Mm-hmm. $200 million. Mm-hmm. And here they're proposing 100 times more. It's just so preposterous. It's as preposterous as Donald Rumsfeld proposing that tourism is going to carry Iraq out of their problems.
Come to the Babylon Holiday Inn. Yeah.
If that's what he said, that must be from The Onion or something.
Well, I don't know. Our reporter says that's what he said. Jeffrey Sachs, we know you're a champion of Africa. We know $87 billion would be a miraculous sum there, but we want to really focus in on Iraq tonight. I want to invite our callers into this conversation a little bit here. Who's got the reality check here, and who's got the fantasy? Is Jeffrey Sachs on the right path? Is the White House on the right path? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Steve's calling from Orleans, Massachusetts. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Thank you. I think the White House is definitely on the white path, or on the right path, and I take some issues with your guest here. He made a statement that we've lost all credibility in the Middle East. I seem to remember in 1979, 500 hostages being taken next door in Iraq.
Yes.
In Iran, rather. I don't think anybody's loved us over there for a long time. There are no successful democracies in the Middle East right now, with the exception of Israel. And as far as trying to compare Africa to Iraq, nobody in Africa is attacking us.
So Steve, what about the 150,000 odd U.S. troops there? Could they come out? If they come out, what do you think? What do you fear would happen?
Well, you're segueing right into the next point. There are not 150,000 troops sitting on the sidelines at the U.N. The Swedes are going to send 2,000. The Pakistanis and the Indians, we want to turn them loose, the two best friends in the neighborhood, the two big bullies. The English are great allies, I believe, have 12 or 14,000 guys there, no more than 20. Where are the people going to come to run this? A democracy does need to be built there, or there's going to be a huge power vacuum, and it's going to end up on our streets again. And the best cure for the Middle East in this whole thing, economically and for the people and for justice for all sorts of groups, is to turn the Iraqi people loose in a free democracy that we assist them in designing. You know, you look back at the Marshall Plan, I believe we're still in Japan with troops.
Yeah, I believe we are. Of course we are.
In Germany with troops.
Steve, we've got it. You're looking at Jeffrey Sachs' line here, and it looks like a pipe dream to you. You're saying we've got to stay in there and support the Iraqi people. Jeffrey Sachs, you hear the critique.
Yeah, when Steve, I respect his view. I don't quite understand what he means that if we're not there in Iraq, they're going to be on our streets again. Saddam Hussein was not on our streets.
But the big dictator's gone now, and we have seen chaotic countries create terrorist threats.
one of the biggest confusions in our body politic is that we went after Saddam. We didn't go after al-Qaeda. And I think this is an absolutely weird thing, although it is understandable in a deeper way. I also have to say, Steve, I just don't believe we're going to be there making a democracy in Iraq. So it's a nice dream, but it seems to me like the same dreams that have propelled us to this point. It's been one endless confusion, and we're not getting anywhere. Every explanation we've been given for why we're there makes no sense. Every expectation that we're going to build a democracy there, to me, I have to say, makes no sense. None of us is a fortune teller. You may be right. I may well be wrong. I just don't see it happening, and I don't believe that it was worth this expense in any way.
Jack Beatty, when Jeffrey Sachs speaks, we really want to listen. He's got an awful lot of big-time experience under his belt, and yet you can hear the voice in our caller, Steve, saying, gosh, we've gone in there. We've committed all this. We've got our troops there. It's not easy. It's not pretty. Maybe they're getting a handle on it somewhere. Maybe they will. How can we walk away?
Well, I guess it's a matter of sort of reconceiving it. What is the problem? Well, there are three sources of violence. There are Ba'athist elements, intransigent. There are al-Qaeda or some sort of terrorist, possibly from Saudi Arabia. And there are sort of a residual nationalists who just don't like us there. Well, then how do you deal with those various groups? Well, we are the target of those groups. It doesn't make, in other words, why are they, it's a front for the war on terror because we're the target. If we take ourselves out of being the target, number one, we spare our young men this nasty war of attrition. We're not configured for that. We do fighting. We knock over governments. We don't stand around and let people shoot at us. My nephew there tells me that when they go through Ambush Alley in their little vehicles, mm-hmm. They put their heads as close to the skin, the top of the vehicle, as they can because they aim at the neck and they try to get between the snipers try to get between the helmet and the flak jacket.
Right.
So if you put the neck right up against the skin of the vehicle,
scrunched
you're safe.
Up in Iraq.
I don't want any American young man to have to do that. That's not what Army does. We are a fighting force. We're not out to, essentially be targets. So remove the target. Let other people come in who first of all, won't have that animosity against them, against the Americans. And as for the Ba'athist, one of the first decisions Paul Bremer made was catastrophic. He said, we're going to demobilize the 400,000-man Iraqi army. A terrible decision. We should immediately revisit that. This is their fight. As soon as the government is consolidated, it can fight. It can deal with its Ba'athists with our help. And we can deal with the border issues. And the UN, if it's in political control of this, can deal with the nationalist problem because they're going to be dealing in legitimacy. They're going to be getting an election going. We reconceive the problem, take ourselves out as the target, say, our young men we're not going to die for oil. We're going to have good relations with this country. We don't have to stay there. We're not the Romans. We don't have to stay there as we have in Germany and Japan. That's apples and oranges. Germany and Japan were matters of fundamental, unequivocal, strategic importance to the United States in the context of a Cold War. There's nothing like this here.
And Middle Eastern oil is not.
No, it is not. Mm. It is not.
Well, you see how the lines are drawn here, how the storylines are drawn. Yes, Jeff Sachs.
Just the question about oil is very important for us to dwell on for a moment, because what I would invite our discussion to contemplate is that maybe we're not really being told the truth about what our aims are. This is important. It is part of my hypothesis, I have to stress, because I have really great doubts that an administration that has shown no interest whatsoever, even in the neighborhood in creating democracy, whose best friends all around are any autocracy that will give us a military base, whether it's Turkmenistan or Uzbekistan or Saudi Arabia itself, that an administration that came in saying they weren't into nation building and all of that whimpery of the Clinton era, that democracy is really the issue.
So set that aside.
We were told that weapons of mass destruction were the issue, was the issue. And most of us that knew something about this and talked to people that knew a lot more about it thought that just wasn't right. And, you know, it turned out to be absolutely not right.
Okay, so let's take it all the way down. Now we're being told
that terrorism is the issue. Well, this is preposterous because, yes, you put yourself, you create a shooting gallery and you say, we can't leave, there's a shooting gallery. So the point I'm making is that for all of us as Americans that would love, no doubt, to have a democracy in Iraq, let's think a little bit whether this is really likely to happen, whether this is really even anything more than the superficial rap administration.
Let's put all that high-minded plumage aside then. Let's drop it all and just get totally down and dirty at the something like where economics live and say it's about oil. Are there still not interests there that U.S. power in the region might not serve? Are you, as an economist, do you look at instability around the major center of oil in the world and say, well, we'll just have to live with that risk?
In a way, yes, because what I believe we're after here is a deep, deep view of Cheney and Rumsfeld all the way back to the oil embargo in 1973-74 when they were senior officials in the Ford administration, when they watched their government fall as a result of the oil embargo, when all of the initial blueprints for seizing oil fields came in. I believe that what we're after is what they have in mind is the utter, urgent, complete strategic necessity and, by the way, not bad business of controlling oil in the Middle East. What I see wrong with that is that it doesn't work. You embrace the Shah, he topples because we are just bad news. You embrace Saddam, that doesn't work because that's bad news. You embrace Saudi Arabia, that doesn't work. Al-Qaeda goes nuts over the presence of the American troops there. And so they say to themselves, gee, we've lost three out of three. We've lost Saudi, Iraq, and Iran. We better get a foothold here again because Qatar just isn't going to do it.
But the U.S. has also dominated that oil region for 50 years and more. Maybe there's only 50 years more of oil left. Maybe they're thinking just as low down and pragmatic as you want to describe it here and saying, well, that's our bet. We've only got 50 years more to go. Let's put our foot on Iraq and then, you know,
I think you have put it exactly right. I think that's just what they're thinking. I think it's a big miscalculation because they live in a world where they really believe that military power can be turned into real control on the ground. I don't believe it.
You don't think it'll last, even as long as the oil may last?
No, because I think this is an obsolescing bargain because contrary to all of the neo-imperialists, I think the age of imperialism is over. People don't want us there, and that's why we really can't be there anymore, no matter what kind of Iraqi face Mr. Rumsfeld's able to find there.
Well, it's not working right now. The pipeline was blown up again this week, and the oil is not flowing out through Turkey. Jeff Sachs, Jack Beatty, stand by. We're talking tonight about a big economist's big exit strategy for the United States in Iraq. What is Washington buying with $150 billion in the first year in Iraq? Iraqi prosperity or U.S. power projection? And if it's projection, is the investment worth the coin? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a big economist's big exit strategy for the United States in Iraq. Our guest is Jeffrey Sachs. He's director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University and has spent the last couple of decades advising big governments on big problems all over the world. He's saying, USA, get out of Iraq. What do you think? Would Iraq be better off if the U.S. left right now and turned the country and its economy over to Iraqis? Is it wishful thinking to imagine that America can now walk away? Is Jeffrey Sachs missing something? Or is the White House missing something in its plans for Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Kathleen is calling from Brewster, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have to say I'm furiously taking down notes of everything Jeffrey Sachs is saying because I don't know why this isn't coming out. It's been so obvious to so many people of a long look at the Middle East when he's going into 1973 and all of that, and I just agree with him wholeheartedly. It's so good to hear the truth. It's so refreshing, and I just I know nothing's as simple as it seems, and everything's more complicated in international politics, but why just perpetrate the madness? And I think they've been planning to go into Iraq since way before 9/11, and I just wanted to thank him, and I hope the word gets out more.
So you say, bravo, bring the U.S. troops home, and do you have no fear, Kathleen, that that leaves a mess behind?
We are creating the mess. There is a mess there to begin with, and we are just, we're just mixing it up, and it's like a hornet's nest, like someone else said. It's just, it's going to be like that, but why make ourselves targets? Why kill any more children? Why make it worse?
Kathleen, we've got it, and we hear what a relief you would anticipate in that homecoming. Thanks very much for your call. Jack Beatty.
Well, I don't think anybody is suggesting that we just come home tomorrow. I think the notion is you turn this nation building, as Mr. Bush said in his campaign, is something the UN should do. It has legitimacy. It knows how to do this. It gets representatives from many countries. We should say to them, this is in your lap. We have got, you know, President Bush can really say, I have achieved two of my aims. One, this evil regime is gone. Now, Saddam may be alive, but that doesn't matter. The regime is broken. Number two, turned out there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. All right, if there had been, it would have been serious. The third goal was to stabilize this new country and to give it a fair shot at having at least somewhat decent society. We haven't achieved that last one, but you know, folks,
the UN's going to work on it. We'll support them.
That's the job of the UN, mm-hmm. And we have made it possible for them. We have really achieved our aims, which we do. We don't do the nation-building part, and we're going to say to them now, we're going to give you some money, we're going to give you political support, we'll give you some military support, but this is yours, UN, and we don't care about the contracts. Our boys don't have to die for Halliburton. You can give those contracts to whoever you want.
Jeff Sachs, is there a chance that whatever the neoconservative line may have been going in, the way the politics are unfolding now, that this is, in fact, where Karl Rove and the White House we'll end up. You heard at the top of the hour John Diamond saying you can hear Rumsfeld now talking about turning it over. Or are you really focused on the Iraqi face? Do you not believe, Jeffrey Sachs, that the U.S. is going to be willing to really turn it over?
I've learned for a long time to follow the money. If the president is asking for $87 billion, he's taking a huge gamble. I think it means that they still believe that they're in there to stay, that they can get over this unpleasant phase, that they can hunker down get what they really went in there for to begin with, which is an effective base of operation for the region. So I don't think that they're throwing in the towel at all yet. I think they made a fateful decision in what this announcement was. They basically said, well, for another year, we have a mass occupation and into an election. I thought maybe they would have chosen differently, given that they haven't. You know, unless another disaster comes, which would be the end of their gamble, and that's quite possible.
But 87 billion
really
says
are
to you.
Hunkering down.
Mm-hmm. So 87 yeah. billion says they're there for the long run. Shane's calling from Barberville, Kentucky. Hi, Shane. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
Unfortunately, I agree with several things on both sides of the fence, but mm-hmm. my question for the guest would be, you made a comment earlier about being concerned, I guess basically about the longer we stay there, the less respect we have in that area. But if I'm not mistaken, when we first went in, did we not, you know, ensure the people of Iraq that we were going to stay there and see it done? And, you know, because we bailed on them once before and left them sort of holding the bag, they were concerned we would do it again.
Right.
It was tough for us to get in there just to gain the respect of the people now. And I think that since it was our decision to go, it was our plan that we more or less force-fed, you know, the world.
Mm-hmm.
But we were going regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're there, you know, I think that we should stay, see the thing done, because when the next major event happens, and it will happen,
yep.
I mean, it's inevitable. Something's mm-hmm. going to go down again. When we have to go back, if we bail on them now, is not the people just going to I mean, it's going to be more and more aggressive toward us. It's like, oh, my gosh, here they are again. They're going to come make another mess.
And forget about it. No one's going to believe them. Shane, we've got it. And let us pick it up. It's a great point. George Bush's father left the Marsh Arabs in southern Iraq and many Shiites to be slaughtered by Saddam Hussein. Two issues here, Jeffrey Sachs. One, at the credibility level, isn't U.S. credibility on the line once President Bush has committed here? And the second, on a reality level, Saddam Hussein is not even captured, let alone dead. We know that until very recently, and I'm betting even now, there are plenty of Iraqis who fear he may yet come back. Could the United States take the risk of Saddam Hussein coming back or al-Qaeda and its legions coming into Iraq and turning it into a new kind of chaos base, another Taliban, another... I mean, you can just imagine 1,000 terrible scenarios there. Credibility, reality. Can the U.S. really do this and not just have a terrible mess left behind?
Well, first, let me say I think Shane asks an excellent question. I agree with you and agree with him that this is a real issue and not an easy issue. It's basically maybe he doesn't mean it this way, but I'll say it.
Okay.
That if you've made a disastrous mistake with predictably awful consequences, what are the implications for what you do next? Maybe he doesn't feel it was so disastrous going in. I thought it was utterly predictable that this was going to spiral out of control. Wrote it, set it, and see the kind of terrorism and shooting and shooting gallery that we've invited to have been what you would expect if you put American boys and young women in the middle of a war zone like that. Now, in terms of our credibility, you know, what in the end did we gain by the years of that commitment to our credibility in Vietnam? What we gained was a disastrous division at home, no credibility abroad, deep disrespect, and of course, an unbelievable cost in terms of lives lost that still hang over us like a pall a generation later. So the question of defending your credibility, the first question is, can you do it? And what is the view from the region? The view from the region, which has collapsed in terms of American credibility, is an accurate view that Americans went in there not for the reasons that were said, but for reasons that were utterly self-serving for America. And the longer we stay, the more that particular belief is also going to be fed. And by the way, I have to say, in terms of credibility, this administration has hardly taken much precaution to avoid those perceptions. We have the stories. Most of our media do not pick up on it, our newspapers, that the Halliburton and Bechtel contracts are vastly larger than what was reported. And so the idea of all these cronies floating around and the oil as such a target of this, you know, it turns out that that the fantasies are the reality. With Shane, I share the idea. I just don't believe you can get there. And I believe that prolonging the agony doesn't help our credibility. It only hurts our credibility.
So we hear
it's
you,
a matter of effectiveness.
Yeah, we hear you grinding your teeth over the Bush administration from your perspective. But what about the other factors there? There's Saddam. There's still a huge Ba'athist organization, presumably, that could come back. There's Iran next door. There's Syria that could pull an Iraq that went off in a very anti-American direction into some kind of holocaust with Israel, God knows. There's Turkey, which would surely feel very uneasy, even though it didn't enter the war, if it's got some kind of cauldron of chaos on its southern border with the Kurds and everything else in Iraq. What about all those real factors? The siren song is so powerful. Nobody wants to revisit Vietnam. But are there realities here that are different from Vietnam?
No, the Saddam reality is not a reality. A vicious guy in hiding, perhaps essentially in isolation, when all his big boy toys of the military hardware that we provided him over the course of a long period are gone, out of his control, do not mean that he can just walk back to power. remember that he's from a minority within a minority, without an army and without the military means, because the hardware, not the stuff that they can shoot our soldiers, but the stuff for him somehow to retake the country, that is utterly controllable. We made the man. Let's remember that. We gave the armaments for him to rule.
Yes, but he's a down-and-dirty street fighter. There's tons of arsenals there that we're reading in the newspapers just this week that even all the U.S. troops can't control. We've got truckloads of gold and cash still unaccounted for. And this guy is a tough guy. Hey, we don't want to make him a boogeyman, but it's got to be a factor. Imran's on the line. Hi, Imran. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I just want to say that I think Shane really kind of captured it, but I'll try and dovetail what he said. And I think that I agree with almost everything that the speaker has said, except I am very uncomfortable with the conclusion, because I think when you look back at kind of our role in Afghanistan and subsequently also in Iraq, every time we leave a power vacuum, and then what ends up stepping into the power vacuum are all the unsavory elements that we end up having to go back and fighting again on another day. And so I guess I'm not really quite comfortable with the conclusion. And then the other point I wanted to make about credibility is that, you know, I think for the rest of the world, especially in the Middle East, America's motives were completely transparent. I mean, despite all the talk of democracy and wanting to change the lot of Iraqis, you know, come on, if they were really interested in that, they would have lifted the sanctions 10 years ago. And I think to most Arabs, probably in the region, they knew it was about oil, and that was it.
So no illusions. Imran, our time is short, but thanks for the call. Jeff Sachs, respond again to that angle of concern.
You know, if our motives are so bad as they are, in practical terms, we will not stabilize the situation, nor will that establish credibility. I think this gentleman had it just right. There was so much fluff around this, but we went in, as many of the neocons told us, in effect, we went in for oil and control. And that's not something to spend hundreds of billions of dollars and American and vast numbers of American lives for. That's, I think, the point. That's not building credibility. That's just digging in a completely untenable and unsustainable manner. And that's the point. If our motives were good, we'd find all sorts of ways through the UN and through assistance and through goodwill to help this country. But our motives weren't good, and that's a big part of the problem. And even bigger part of the problem is that's the feeling in the region. And that means that digging in is not digging out of the problem. It's just digging deeper in the problem.
Whatever the White House may wish, motives matter, I guess, even in economics, even maybe especially in security. Jeffrey Sachs, great as always to have you. Thanks for opening up a big perspective here. Thanks for being with us tonight.
It's always a pleasure.
Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Jack Beatty, there's a big alternate view, and it doesn't get a lot of airing here, but there's a big voice airing it.
Indeed, I'm very glad to hear it. Very important to hear it. I agree with Kathleen about that. You know, just on this credibility point, as a historical matter, after our retreat from Vietnam, we went on to win the Cold War, to break the evil empire. Our President Kennedy's credibility suffered terribly at the Bay of Pigs. We botched an invasion. It was rock solid a year later in the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Russians were under no doubt about our necessity to defend our vital interests.
But Vietnam had bamboo and rice. Iraq has oil.
Yes, and people have to sell oil. They can't just take it away, right? Mm-hmm. No matter what the regime is, they'll have to sell it to cash in on it. Even Saddam had to sell it.
And Uncle Sam knows how to buy oil.
He sure does.
Jack, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation on our website. Go to onepointradio.org, click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.